The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'm Dr. Eugene Zamperl, Dr. Z, affectionately known around these parts, and of course, you're listening right here to the Progressive Radio Network. Hey, today we have a great, great book. I think this is probably the best book I've read this year so far, that's for sure. And that's by Susan Weed, the voice of the wise woman tradition and one of the founding grandmothers of the herbal renaissance. She has four previous best-selling books like New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Breast Cancer, Breast Health. Definitely have that one, and I had Susan on many years ago. We talked about that one. The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Second Wise Woman Herbal, and Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Years. Susan maintains an active worldwide teaching schedule and offers correspondence courses, online education through the Wise Women University, and shamanic apprenticeships. She's taught at Yale Nursing and Midwifery School, American College of Nurse Midwives, Bastyr Naturopathic College, Rocky Mountain Center for Botanical Studies, and many other places around the world, New Zealand, in Germany. We'd like to get her one of these days down here to Bridgeport at the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine to teach. And we're going to be discussing her new book on sexual health called Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. Her website, www.susanweed.com. Susan, are you there?
Green blessings. It's always a joy to be with you. So glad to be back.
Thanks, Susan. Tell us a little bit about the wise woman tradition and sort of paint the historical picture with other types of herbalism that's evolved, or isms and schisms, as they say, that have evolved over the many millennia.
Well, the tradition of healing that most of us are most familiar with is the scientific tradition. In the scientific tradition, we measure and then we fix. And this works very, very good for machines. And there are certain things in which, if we apply this machine view to the body, it works. But as quite a few people know, it doesn't work really well for many people much of the time. So many people go searching for answers. And what they usually find is the heroic tradition. Not my name for it, their name for it. And the heroic tradition believes that the root of all problems is imbalance and filth. And so in the heroic tradition, we do our best to balance and to cleanse. And as I personally went along this path, I saw devastating results from balancing and cleansing. And was led, because of my hard science background, to understand that balance is actually the step that immediately precedes death, and that life, the very nature of life, is change. And so I am the voice of the wise woman tradition, which is the oldest tradition, and a tradition that has a very different view. It basically says that we are already perfect and that we are already whole, and that if we wish to get better, say, whether we're already in health or dealing with some problem, that what we do is we nourish wholeness and we nourish health. So rather than fixing or cleansing, we nourish the unique, whole individual.
So by nourishing, we can basically use good food, good nutrition, good herbs, proper absorption, good thoughts. How do we nourish, Susan?
Well, I think that all of those things are important. I see nourishment as like a three-legged milking stool. And certainly it has to do with the specific things that we consume, what we eat and what we drink. And this is one of the reasons why I have a free class at my online university called Drink Your Way to Health with Nourishing Herbal Infusions. And anyone who wants to study how to get healthy just by drinking, not water, Not any special elixir, certainly nothing that I sell, can come to the wisewomanbookshop.com and sign up for free for Drink Your Way to Health with Nourishing Herbal Infusions. The Nourishing Herbal Infusions are not teas. They are water-based herbal drinks that you make yourself at home. It takes about 5 minutes a day, and just amazing results. People are throwing their drugs away, throwing their supplements away, and enjoying vigorous health, boundless energy, and a really juicy life. I think that's what we all want.
Yeah.
So that's important part of nourishment. But nourishment is also, in the words of Gurdjieff, the sum of the impressions that we ingest.
Hmm.
And I tell people, you know, you're making a couple of million new cells every second. If you sit and watch, say, the evening news for 10 minutes, how many new cells are in your body that now contain the evening news? And they'll be there for 7 years. Is that what you really want? Maybe you'd rather spend that 10 minutes walking. Even in an urban environment, you will be taking in the sounds of nature, the smells of nature, and you will build yourself from those things. One of the first assignments that I give my shamanic apprentices is they must sit for 10 minutes a day directly in front of a plant they've chosen and exchange breath with it. In this way, we actually build ourselves out of the breath of the plant. So what we eat, the nourishment of our impressions, and perhaps the most important nourishment, because it's so little talked about in our culture, which is the nourishment of story.
Yeah, we're so caught up with the various electromagnetic influences and things like that, artificial things, that we lost the whole storytelling thing. It was refreshing to actually have a hurricane here on the East Coast, because we just sat and told stories and talked, and it was wonderful to bring those.
Wasn't it, though? Yes, I'm in, you know, the National Disaster Area, Ulster County. So we were pretty Irene'd.
Yeah.
It's true. And, yes, you know, there was a great ha when suddenly we had to rely on each other. And I don't know about where you were, but certainly in my area, in the Woodstock area, people really came up to the mark, were so helpful to each other. And the friends that I had in Vermont, which was very hard hit, the same thing. People really pulled together. Many years ago, I was thrown out of an organic conference for saying that local is more important than organic.
Is that right?
And, of course, one of the reasons is that local contains a story.
Now, so talk about story. In your book, you have this very interesting six stages of healing, which I just found great. It's like the healing hierarchy that we go through, where you have step zero, do nothing, and that's kind of you know, a vital step. You know, instead of do nothing, maybe not doing is a different way of saying that. And then step one, collective.
Well, actually,
go ahead.
Wait, not doing is not another way of saying that.
Okay.
Do nothing is the actual involvement in nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
That would be Vipassana meditation. In other words, meditation on nothing. That would be taking a day of silence.
Mm-hmm.
That would be sleeping an extra hour. Mm. That would be engaging in any kind of meditation practice. So it is the active doing of nothing. There's a wonderful saying from China. It says, if it's not worth doing tomorrow, it's probably not worth doing today.
Excellent. And then collect information. So what's that about?
Well, collect information is also story medicine. And let's say that you have a constant upset stomach. Every time you eat, your stomach feels upset, you get acid indigestion, you're just really uncomfortable. Now, if we go to someone in the scientific tradition, they're going to tell us a specific story about what's going on there, and that story is going to be called the diagnosis, and it will lead to a treatment. And as we know, that story will probably be, you need to take an acid-inhibiting drug. If you went to an herbalist, you would get a different story. The herbalist would say, oh, your stomach isn't making enough acid, and that's why you're getting acid reflux, and dandelion will help you bring that up. So again, the story is a diagnosis, and it leads to the kind of corrective that we're going to use. Say you went to a chiropractor. The chiropractor might say, you have a subluxation at this place. Let's get this back in place, and that problem should go away. If you went to an acupuncturist, the acupuncturist might say, your triple burner is overheating. The energy from the liver is not being dispersed properly, and we're going to put acupuncture needles at these points and perhaps do some moxibustion. So collecting information, to my mind, is a very dangerous place in modern medicine. Let me tell you a story about a woman who had indigestion. And she did go to her doctor, who said, yes, we're going to put you on an acid-inhibiting drug. And unfortunately, she had a pretty bad reaction to that, which caused her to get a major infection. And she wound up in the hospital because of this infection and taking antibiotics, which she was also sensitive to, and she went into kidney failure. And now she's, you know, on all of these lines, and because she had all of these lines in her body, she got one of those very heavy-duty, antibiotic-resistant hospital infections. And because of that, they gave her really strong antibiotics, which put her into liver failure.
Here's domino, somebody with an domino effect of things, you know.
Right, here's somebody with an upset stomach who almost died.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Because of the story she chose to believe. So it becomes very important what story we're going to do, and especially because we're going to go through these other stages. But as you see in this case, when we go to the scientific tradition, by law, the MDs, the people working in the scientific tradition, basically have to go immediately to steps 5 and 6, use drugs or break and enter. And so they bypass the intermediary steps, all of which are much safer. It's no news to you, and I bet it's no news to your listeners, that the leading cause of death in any industrialized country is properly prescribed drugs, properly taken.
Yeah, as even talked about in that old JAMA study that people certainly talk about. Now,
exactly.
The next step is engage the energy. So tell us about that, how being tuned into shamanism and kind of understanding what the various types of energy medicine, what that would entail.
Well, I also call that mind medicine. And those who do not, shall we call them, believe in it, call it placebo medicine. And I'm comfortable with all of those terms, whether we're working with our own minds, whether we're working with energy, which is invisible and often unmeasurable, or whether we're going to call it a placebo. Even the naysayers must admit that placebos work 50% of the time. And I'm certainly up for getting 50% of the people better, basically by doing nothing more than changing their minds. For many of us, this is a very rich area. It would include things like flower essences and Reiki. It would include prayer and visualization. It would include, well, I call it the shaman's playground, and I say that this step is as wide and as deep as the human imagination.
But it's a very important step that people, they can't jump over these steps. I find that the energy, engaging the energy is really very important, that's for sure.
And of course, once we have our story, we know in what manner we want to engage the energy. Without our story, it's kind of like we're in our car driving down the road and we don't know where we're going. The story says you're heading this way, and there may be twists and turns and detours along the way, but the story gives you your goal. It gives you your direction, so that when we start engaging the energy, we've put our car in gear toward a particular place. Now, interestingly enough, that doesn't necessarily mean that we have a specific end point in sight. I'm sure that you're familiar with a pretty interesting study they did. As people were coming out of heart surgery, they were assigned to one of three groups. One group prayed for these people to heal rapidly and be well. One group didn't get prayed for at all. And one group got a general prayer, kind of, may God's will be done. And interestingly enough, the people who got the specific prayer fared worse than those who got no prayer. But the ones who really seemed to get the good of it were the ones who got the general may the will of the universe be manifested here. So this is why I say engage the energy rather than direct the energy.
Right.
I know that many of your listeners, and perhaps even you, are quite familiar with Reiki. And I use that as a model because it's so clearly taught that when we're doing Reiki, I am not healing you. You are not my patient. I am part of the universal energy. You are the part of the universal energy. And working together with our own abilities, we can use that energy for the good of all.
Yeah. And then next is to what you talked about earlier on in the show, nourish, tonify. That could include movement, yoga, tai chi. It's interesting. I do like a walking type of qigong, which is really interesting. Moxibustion, tonic herbs. We create ourselves with every choice we make. So that's interesting, like you were talking about impressions and how taking in impressions of violence or the news affects all our cells.
Yes. And these first four steps, the serenity medicine, story medicine, mind medicine, and lifestyle medicine, always build health. Whether they can reverse or cure our problems, well, often they can. But if they don't, we're in a much healthier state to go on to using alternative medicine, pharmaceutical medicine, or high-tech medicine. And,
right.
I just want to say I almost blushed with joy when you praised the new book, because I've built on the successful features of my previous books, which includes the six steps of healing, so that we have the entire range of things. You don't just go to my book to look for herbal remedies. I will also tell you about the homeopathic remedies, the energy remedies. I will tell you the stories, and I will tell you what drugs are used in this condition and what you need to watch out for, which ones can help you and which ones can really harm you. And I will also discuss surgery and which surgeries can really be helpful and which you really need to beware of. So that's still in my book. And I added some new things that I'm really happy with, like I added help boxes. So
yes, I like that.
Every little section, there's a little box. Wham, here's the things you can do right now. You don't have to read the book.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things in the book. Like, I teach urology at the University of Bridgeport, so a lot of this information in here I find just, amazingly appropriate for all patients and naturopathic doctors and herbalists to look at and read. Even the way you laid the book out is fabulous. I like these little boxes. Myself and the Natural Nurse, the show, we published a long time ago our arthritis book, and we used a lot of boxes and quick definitions and things like that, kind of in that tradition. So I find that's real helpful.
Yeah.
But like, I have some challenging patients, like everyone else in their kind of quest to be a healer or whatever, to help people, be a coach or whatever you
yes.
want, step in their path. I have a woman with interstitial cystitis, and I found some of your information to be quite interesting. Can you talk a little bit about interstitial cystitis and how you presented it in the book and what maybe people can do about it?
Well, it's been rather fascinating for me. I did research for this book for 25 years and then spent about 4 years writing the book. And of course, over that period of time, I saw this kind of, wow, you have, a chronic bladder infection here, and it doesn't seem to be responding to anything, suddenly turn into a different diagnosis, which is a cystitis that occurs within the inner lining of the bladder, interstitial, that's what that means. It's within the actual cells. And since we have, now we can put tiny little cameras up in there, we can actually see the ulcers that are in there. And I was kind of surprised to find that there are still urologists out there who told me, I don't believe in interstitial cystitis. I think these women are just hysterical.
Wow. Because there are very, very specific ulcers, the Hunter's ulcers, as I recall, that they find in the bladder there. So there's something happening.
There's definitely something happening. And I'm sure that you're aware and that you would never, never do this. But as a woman, I do need to speak up and say that in a recent study where they took a woman with problematic knee and a man with a problematic knee and gave them exactly the same script and sent them out to doctors, approximately 90% of the time, the doctors recommended something to relieve the pain for the man, and about 80% of the time, the doctors told the woman that she needed to go to a therapist because she was imagining her pain.
It's terrible.
And we just find this over and over again, and especially things that do seem to strike women more frequently, like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and interstitial cystitis, and unfortunately heart attacks in older women, tend to get sidelined. And one of my best friends went to the hospital with severe pain in her back, was given a muscle relaxer, and sent home to die of her heart attack. A classic symptom in women is pain in the back. Not the same as for men. So in looking at interstitial cystitis, as you say, you know, we start off with do nothing. Meditate, take a nap, soak in a hot bath, take it easy. You know, while I certainly don't think that women with interstitial cystitis necessarily need therapy, I'm not saying they wouldn't benefit from it, because often by the time a woman gets a diagnosis of it, she has spent quite a few years being told that she's crazy in one form or another, and she's very agitated. So this is critically important. I certainly believe that people who are upset have a harder time getting well.
Right.
And then we talk about a great variety of ways to engage the energy. This also, for me, has to do with our emotional work. And there are healers who believe that interstitial cystitis is really grudges that we have kept. Hmm. It's a withholding attitude in China. And so women with interstitial cystitis might want to give their grudges away to the universe and just literally let it go and allow the energy of healing to come in, then nourishing and tonifying and a great variety of things. When I wrote this book, I started with the cervix, but I was argued into a corner by people who said the pelvic floor underlies it all, and chapter number one has got to be the pelvic floor. Mm. And I then found, whether I wanted to or not, that almost every problem I did have to say, and do pelvic floor exercises, and certainly interstitial cystitis is one of those where we have found that this will increase lymphatic circulation, really bring good blood flow back to that area, tonify the bladder wall, reduce the pain of the interstitial cystitis, and in many cases actually eliminate the symptoms. When we move into alternative medicine, we want to look at anti-inflammatory herbs, and I give you a list of a variety of anti-inflammatory herbs that can be used. And then I discuss some possible supplements. I give a quote here that drug therapy has the very best reported outcomes. Sometimes people want to think of me as anti-drug. I'm not. Where drugs work, I'm really happy to have people take drugs. I just don't want to see us harmed by them, and I'm sure that's your belief as well.
I've seen people with, they seem to do okay with the Elmeron, but I've also had people infuse in their bladder, you know, comfrey and go to cola extract and get just as good results as the Elmeron.
Yes, yes. The Elmeron can be taken orally, however.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, in my experience, which is certainly far more limited than yours, and I, too, agree that comfrey leaf infusion is a real helper, as is linden, marshmallow root, any of the real soothers can make their way to the bladder and soothe. But again, as you so wisely brought out at the very beginning, we're not sending people right for drug therapy. We're really saying, if the herbs aren't working for you, here's a drug that doesn't have terrible side effects. And over half the women who use it do get improvement. Neither you nor I would want people to go right to using the drug, but certainly if we have somebody who isn't responding to anything else, I'm happy to know that there is a drug. And what I like to do is not just to move forward in these six steps of healing, but to move backward as well. So if I can get that woman stabilized with the Elmeron and get her pain-free, then she's far more likely to want to listen to dietary recommendations.
Right. Because when you're in pain, it's just all encompassing, you know, and it's kind of hard to listen, like you said, and you want to skip those four stages in the healing process, like you mentioned: do nothing, collect information, engage the energy, nourish, tonify. You want to go right to just sedate the pain, or
get me out of pain.
Get me to the point where, you know. So, and by the way, I like your suggestion of using kava tea there, because that seems to help with the stress and and with pain as well. And plus, it has tremendous uses for the bladder and your genital conditions. I think that's great information.
Yeah,
kava was vilified by, you know, these kind of phytochemistry people in Europe. And what do you think about that, Susan?
Well, actually, what happened, I think, is very important for all of us to understand. Mm. First of all, we're talking about something that occurred in Germany. And Germany has a lot of laws about herbal medicine. We might say, oh, Germany has legalized herbal medicine, but legalization sounds nice. Laws are really more what we're talking about here. You can't, in Germany, the way you can in America, just go out and decide for yourself what herb you want to take. You pretty much need a prescription. And when you get that, you're going to wind up taking an herb in a pill or a capsule form. And I got to tell you, so far as I can see, the best way to damage yourself with herbs is to take them in pills or capsules. So a variety of people were prescribed kava by their doctors in Germany. And the pharmacognosist who was supposed to be getting the herb to be, you know, ground up and put in these capsules, couldn't get kava root, but was able to get kava leaf, and didn't check and wasn't trained thoroughly enough, and so bought the kava leaf instead, and kava leaf destroys the liver.
Yeah.
And we had 30 people go into liver failure, some of whom had to have liver transplants. And so the popular press says kava, you know, did this. Well, there are four questions that we need to ask to distinguish folklore from herbal medicine. If we don't know the answers to these four questions, what we're getting is folklore. I'm not against folklore. It's given me some good ideas, which I pursued so that I could bring them to herbal medicine. And those four questions are, what part of the plant are we talking about? There can be a very big difference, as we see here in kava, between the root or the leaf. You wouldn't want to eat rhubarb leaf, but you could sure eat the stalk of the rhubarb leaf. And neither would you want to eat rhubarb root. We also need to know when that's harvested, because constituents in plants change throughout the year. Then we want to know how it's prepared. As I said, in my experience, the worst way to take an herb is in a capsule. Far better to use a tincture or a vinegar or an infusion. And then the final question, which is always the most critical question whenever we're talking about any healing substance, is what is the dose?
The dose, you know, the dose is either poison or medicine. That's what Paracelsus said, you know.
That's right. We know that we must know about that. We're looking at folk medicine. Kava injures the liver. That's not news. That's folk medicine.
I heard also that the Osinians kept a lot of the big tap roots for themselves and sold the peripheral roots and leaves to the Europeans, and those were pretty toxic too. So, well, we need to take a break. I hear the music. Quick break to do a station ID and things like that. And when we get back, I'd like to talk about issues vaginally and this whole controversy with HPV. And also talk about, the health of the uterus, and then even move on to some men's health, which I'm very interested in discussing with you. Again, Susan Weeds here, talking about Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. Stay with us right here on Progressive Radio Network. Okay, and we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network, and we're having a fabulous discussion with Susan Weed. She's an herbalist and, of course, the voice of the wise woman tradition, one of the grandmothers of the herbal renaissance, and we're talking about her book down there, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. Susan, let's get back right on to what we were talking about here, and we wanted to get more into maybe urinary tract infections for women. This is, you know, I had an interesting story where this lady went from doctor to doctor to doctor and even specialists, and they were all telling her, like you mentioned, the same story. Eventually, you know, they said, well, you have to live on antibiotics the rest of your life. Well, you know, she didn't really accept that, and is now, you know, cured of the condition through certainly wise woman things that are in line with your wise woman philosophy. So tell us a little bit about urinary tract infections.
Well, actually, urinary tract infections are something that basically no woman lives free of. Every woman has had one or more urinary tract infections. And I actually cover urinary tract infections in almost every one of my books. They come up in Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year. They come up in New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and, of course, a large section in Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. But I wanted to take just a moment to read something from the book, because one of the great joys and thrills for me in writing this book was that I sat and let each organ speak through me. I am the holding tank. I am the low point. All flows come down to me. It all comes down to me. What goes flows to the kidneys. And when the kidneys are done with what goes round, it flows down to me. It all comes down to me, you see. It flows round and it comes down, and I hold it in until it's time. And then I let it go so it can go round back into the flow. Though I am part of it all, I am a part. I am touched by it all, but not taken. I am the container, but not the contents. I offer short-term storage, no interest, no credit, just in and out, here and gone. I have no plans, no memories, no desires. Fill me, empty me. I am in the flow. I can hold it for you, but I can only hold so much. Your rage trickles down to me. It burns me. It irritates me. Your fear of life seeps into me. It annoys me. It compresses me. Your grudges precipitate and settle into me. Your suspicions grab hold of me. They tear at me. They agitate me. Controlling me does not give you control over life. Trust the process. Surrender to the flow. It all comes down to me. It all flows round and round, and it comes out down here. I am your bladder.
I guess you could say that story. I'd love to read other stories like that with other organs, because I think everybody should read that. In one of my books, I did this thing about pain soliloquy, and I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but that's a fascinating thing, too.
Yes.
You know pain soliloquy, that little poem? Yeah, about how, you know, pain's a good thing, you know, telling people that they're going to run out the door, but they have to be kind of open to understanding this communication with their body. But nonetheless, I'm glad you put that in there and these wonderful soliloquies in your book.
I was at a birthday party last night for an 89-year-old friend, and we had the book, and I read The Testes.
Yeah.
And the men at the party were laughing so hard. They said, oh, you really got it. You really got exactly what's going on down there.
Yeah, exactly.
So you also mentioned that you wanted to talk a little bit about the vagina and
yes.
human papillomavirus and the cervix. And as I said, really, that's one of the places that I started. Was at the cervix because it made me so upset how many women are being over-treated and maltreated for human papillomavirus and how unclear the doctors are about that. The vagina says, I am more than the sheath of your sword. I am toothed, armed, and ready to bite. I am not passive, accepting and ready to be filled. I am aware, watchful, and ready to seize what I will and reject what I don't. Listen to me, and I will tell you how safe we feel right now. When secure, I am open and receptive, moist and inviting. When threatened, I become cold and hard, hot and tight, irritated and inflamed. When the danger is chronic, I weep, I overrun. I lie between what is shown and what is hidden. I am both public and private. I am the identity of woman by my name, is woman named. By my power is woman empowered. From my lips, you hear only the truth. I am your vagina. And I have some guided meditation for a secure vagina. And then I also get to have a little fun here and there in the book. And we have a page called What Do You Call That? In which I ask a lot of people, what do you call down there? You know, one person said to me, oh, you're writing a book about down there. Is that a travel log about Australia? And I said, honey, if you call it Australia, it's about Australia. So let's get a little crunchy here about human papillomavirus. Human papillomavirus is the virus your mother warned you against. It does not require the human body to pass it. So although we think of it as sexually transmitted, it can be transmitted in a great many other ways. You know, your mom said, don't sit on that toilet seat. Well, you can actually get human papillomavirus from sitting on that toilet seat. You could get human papillomavirus by using a towel that somebody else used. You could get it in a variety of ways. Lesbians get human papillomavirus. Nuns get human papillomavirus. The Center for Disease Control estimates that maybe 60 to 70% of sexually active adults have human papillomavirus. I'm interested to know what you think about that statistic. My guess would be it's probably closer to 95%.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's much more.
Yeah, it's just far more common than we think. And, of course, because we now know that certain strains of human papillomavirus can lead to cervical cancer, we now have another way for modern medicine to scare people and for women to go for a simple pap smear and be told, well, you have the precursor to cancer. And so what we're going to do is a variety of, and they don't use these words, they don't say we're going to do, you know, some really invasive things here which actually won't get rid of your human papillomavirus at all. They lead women to believe that cutting out a piece of the cervix, burning the cervix, putting acid on the cervix, running lasers over the cervix, freezing the cervix, that all these things will get rid of the human papillomavirus, which they do not.
Well, you made an interesting comment. You said the genital warts we can see are nothing to worry about. It's the ones we can see that are the troublemakers. I think that says it all.
It does, indeed. And so you might want to wonder, well, how can I possibly know if I have this? Do I have to then actually go to a doctor and have a doctor, you know, examine these? And on page 188, I said, for those like myself who prefer to avoid doctors, a visual examination can be made for human papillomavirus. In Zimbabwe, nurse midwives took a pap smear and then swabbed the cervix with vinegar, you know, just like what you buy in the supermarket, regular white vinegar, and with the aid of a flashlight, and of course a speculum, they then looked for any white areas, because human papillomavirus warts turn white in the presence of vinegar.
Right.
77% of the positive vinegar tests were actually accurate when a DNA analysis was done, while only 44% of the positive pap smears were. So this is a highly reliable test that you can do at home. And then I give you a great number of ways to actually get rid of the virus. Do you work at all with Hypericum perforatum tincture?
Quite a lot.
Yes, because it is one of the best antivirals that we have. And again, you know, to lay a little more on my theme. I did a class on, some people call it St. John's wort, but it's so good to prevent burns that I figured St. Joan was a better saint there.
That's
she
true.
Knows more about burns than John. And there were 40 people in the class. I asked if any of them, you know, were seeing people, and every one of them was, and their average client load was about 100 people. So we represented about 4,000 people in that classroom. Mm. And I asked if anyone had ever seen any sun sensitivity, which you'll see in the caution sometimes. And the only person who raised her hand was someone who was suggesting that people take it in capsules.
So right, that's true. When I was at Bastyr College years ago, when I was a student, and we were giving high doses to the HIV-positive men, some of them had that, but it was very mild. Plus, it's pretty cloudy in Seattle, so it's a good place to take it.
Right. I have HIV-positive friends who were actually diagnosed back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And they've been taking Hypericum sometimes as often as a dropperful every hour.
Right.
And
exactly.
None of them have gone on to AIDS. Mm-hmm. This is a very powerful antiviral, and I have definitely seen it clear human papillomavirus from the body.
And I like the celandine, too. Like, that's one of my favorite plants to use fresh.
And it's evergreen, so we can get it fresh all times of the year. Of course, the difficulty with that is that once you get past the Rocky Mountains going west, celandine just isn't found.
Oh, is that right? It's just on the east here, huh?
It's pretty much an East Coast plant, and because it has to be used fresh...
You could use thuya. I know you mentioned
thuya
tincture.
Oil, right?
Very good one.
Well, considered really one of the basic remedies for things going on out there. Do note, though, that I put all the essential oils as pharmaceutical medicines. I don't consider them herbal medicine.
Yeah, because they kind of are taken out of, the oils are made into such concentrations that you'd never see them in nature like that. So,
exactly. Yeah. And they have immune system disrupting effects. Gut-disrupting effects, and even scarier to me, hormonally disruptive effects. I have two students. Mm. Now, granted, I have thousands and thousands of students, so we're not talking a high percentage, but I do have two students with sons under six who are growing breasts because they were using body care products with lavender oil in them.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, it was actually really good quality organic lavender oil, not some cheap thing. So certainly, again, my books cover all of the different things that we can use. I'm not against anything except harm. I think that we deserve to have remedies that will be as harmless as possible.
Absolutely.
And, of course, in the very beginning of my discussion of human papillomavirus, what do I say? I say, do nothing. Now, I had one MD kind of throw the book at me, literally. And, you know, she opened it up to human papillomavirus, and she said, oh, I can't believe that you are telling women to do nothing. This is outrageous. They could die from this. And I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, I wish she would have actually read the very first thing, which is a quote, and it says, for women with the earliest signs of human papilloma virus infection, the best prescription is no treatment at all. 3 out of 4 women lose their positive status, often within the first year, suggesting that the body's own immune system can drive
just
human papillomavirus
away. Just floss your teeth. One person had their teeth taken care of, and all their papillomavirus has just disappeared.
Right.
Plus, I guess they had some type of a stealth infection that kept chronically irritating their body. So just kind of dealing with other things may bring the body back into a wholeness. Unfortunately, I'm looking at the clock, and we're running out of time, Susan.
70% of human papillomaviruses remiss on their own within 1 year, 90% within 2 years with no treatment of any kind.
Yeah.
We're running out of time.
I know. I'm going to have to have you on again. I'll talk to Dr. Kamai about, because there's so much more to talk about, that's for sure.
We should have a whole show about, like, prostate issues.
Yes. That sounds great, because I'm actually going to be covering that at this moment. It's so serendipitous to have you on and be holding your book. That's my next unit in class, and so this is great. great. So it fell into the right hands, and certainly, hopefully, we'll get it into many listeners' hands. This is a great book. I would call it just a wonderful read and to learn about all mind, body, spirit. And by the way, this is very well researched. I'm very impressed by these references and even the scientific nature of the book, too. You've kind of balanced it all, Susan, from the spiritual and wise women way to even the naysayers and all the, the kind of academic, you know, kind of like the eggheads that like all this scientific reference stuff. So it's very good.
Yeah, we offer you the full range of integrative, alternative, and orthodox options, fully explained so you can make the very best choices for your own health. We're all unique individuals. I can't tell you what the best thing for you is, but I can lay it out as a smorgasbord, and you can pick it up.
And your website, SusanWeed.com?
SusanWeed.com.
And that's where people can get the book, or probably other places. It's AshTreePublishing.com.
That's right, or the Wise Woman Bookshop, and that's also where you can go and get that free course, Drink Your Way to Health, with nourishing herbal infusions. I run an abundance-based business. We got to pay the rent like everybody else, but we do our best to give away as much information as we can, because I always figure every person on this planet that's healthier makes me healthier, too.
Thanks, Susan, and I'm going to definitely have Dr. Kamai have you on for part two, and we'll contact you about our other radio programs. That's a wrap for this edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z wishing you the best in health and wellness. Stay healthy, folks. Bye.